Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome one and all to the RTC Weekly Download. Jim Dolan here as your host. This week we have some game shows for you. Radio had game shows, and they were interesting. We're going to go from one extreme to the other. We're going to start off with the very intellectual Information Please, and the guest here is Boris Karloff, and that's from 1943, and in about 30 minutes' time we'll have Truth or Consequences, and the problem is Instructions for Milking a Cow from 1947. So get your game show hats on, and here we go with Information Please.
Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you Information Please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and unrehearsed as ever, Information Please continues on its wayward path. Our two regulars, John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, are here to bat them out in consort with our two guests, Jan Struther, creator of Mrs. Miniver, and Boris Karloff, currently scaring the pants off the West Coast in arsenic and old lace. Miss Struther and Mr. Karloff, I should explain, are in a Hollywood studio, and we are here in New York, about 3,000 miles away. And we're going to try to communicate by a system of signals which we shall now try out for the first time in the history of Information, Please. Mr. Karloff, what signal are you going to use that I'll know that you're going to answer the question?
Well, I thought I might growl like the monster in Frankenstein.
How do you do that? Well, there are two rows out already here. And how about you, Miss Struther? What are you going to use?
Well, Harpo Marx lent me this horn. Shall I try it?
Yes, please. That's wonderful. Is Harpo there?
He was just now. I think he's hiding behind something.
Well, maybe the horn scared him. All right, we have the signals arranged, and all we have to do now is to start our transcontinental program with a question from Lee Werber of New York City. Each of these dates in May, this is May, commemorates a specific event. What is it? Let's get two out of three. The first is May 10th. May 10th. Commemorates an event? Oh, yes, that's Miss Struther. Miss Struther?
That's right. Hello?
Yes?
You want to know the answer?
Now, don't be coy. We have no time for that sort of thing.
Well, to start off with, it's my eldest son's birthday, and secondly, it's the day Hitler invaded Norway, and thirdly, it's the day Chamberlain went out.
Well, now, I'm not sure about the... I'm sure about the first, all right, but he didn't invade Norway in May 10. He invaded the Low Countries.
Oh, my mistake, yes.
And now, what did you say about Chamberlain?
I think it's the day that Chamberlain ceased to be Prime Minister of England.
You sound extremely tentative, Miss Struther, very tentative.
Well,
I'm not sure if that's true. It also commemorates the burning of the books in Germany, May 10th, 1933. That's just 10 years ago. I think, subject to recall, we're going to call that one wrong, and go on to this date, which is May 28th. That commemorates, Mr. Adams?
The birth of the quintuplet.
Yes. Very good, Mr. Adams. And what year was that?
Well, they're supposed to be 8 years old, but I don't know if it was last May 28th. I think it's this May 28th they'll be eight.
They were born in 1934. We have no time to figure it out.
Nine.
that's right, Mr. Adams. And finally, May 17th commemorates what event? May... Miss Struther.
Oh!
Mr. Carlo.
It commemorates the founding of the Home Guard in England.
Well, of all things, I didn't know that. Is that true? May 17th?
I hope so.
You're not making these things up, Mr. Karloff, in that monstrous manner of yours.
I think Churchill had something to say about it over here the other day, didn't he?
That's quite possible. Mr. Adams?
It commemorates the time when Karloff and Struther were out in Hollywood.
You're just making that up.
It's true.
It is true. Is that right, Mr. Karloff, Miss Struther?
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Here we are.
It commemorates today, you mean. Yes, actually, it commemorates something far more important than that. Today is the 5th anniversary of what, Mr. Kieran?
Of the start of Information, please.
Yes. Haven't you any local pride? The 5th anniversary of Information, please. And as long as nobody else seems to be doing it, the Master of Ceremonies will now applaud. I assume, Mr. Karloff, that you were right in your answer about the Home Guard, and will therefore...
I was exactly right, but I had the wrong date.
Oh, you had the wrong date. Well, in that case, we'll send $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Werber, courtesy of the H.J. Hines Company, plus a set of the Britannica with the compliments of Mr. Karloff, who remembered the month but not the day. How about this one from Mayor Hyman of Trudeau, New York? I want you to differentiate the following. One, a vampire. Two, a zombie. Three, an ogre. Suppose we start with a vampire. The vampire speaks. Oh, Miss Struther? I beg your pardon, Miss Struther. I thought that
was
Mr.
That's all right. No, he's the other one. A vampire is, for one thing, it's a kind of bat that sucks blood, human blood.
Yes.
And a zombie is an extremely strong alcoholic mixed drink, of which you're only allowed to have one.
It is something else, though you may not have heard of it, Miss Struther.
Oh, I have, yes. It's called after that.
What is a zombie originally?
I mean, you may have been introduced to it.
Wah! It's the unburied dead.
Thank you, Mr. Karloff. Mr. Karloff, you are scaring me to death. I'm going to ask you to use some other signal.
I'll fall back on the buzzer.
All right, because I shall never be able to last out this half hour. An ogre, finally. An ogre? Mr. Adams?
An ogre is a Karloff. In sheep's clothing.
Is that right, Mr. Ogre?
You say it to my face, Adams.
That's the hard part, Karloff. Yeah, an ogre is a... What does he do, Mr. Adams, when he's not Karloff? What's his name?
He scares people.
Yes, but Mr. Karloff?
Well, he's a giant.
Yes, he's a giant.
One thing.
Often. Mr. Kieran?
He eats little children.
Yes, little children, or middle-sized children, almost any size. That gives
Sometimes he has only one eye in the middle of his forehead.
Have you ever acted the part, Mr. Karloff?
No, but I hope to.
Here's one from Mrs. Alma T. Hutchinson of Elizabeth, New Jersey. Where, in fact or in fiction, do you find people dressed as follows? First, dressed in green. Dressed in green. I have Hollywood calling. Miss Struther? Miss Struther?
Robin Hood and his merry men.
Robin Hood and his merry men. Very
in
good.
In Lincoln green.
In Lincoln green, yes. How about people who are dressed in pearl buttons? And I presumably something else, too. Was that Mr. Karloff?
It was both of us.
All right, Mr. Karloff.
We might say it together.
It's the London costermongers.
Yes, you'll have to explain that to us. What are costermongers?
They're chaps who live in the East End, and they sell a lot of old clothes and things like that, and they have a little barrow and a donkey, and on bank holidays, they go out with these huge buttons all over their clothes.
Yes, now that's very quaint. What does the word costermonger come from, Mr. Karloff?
I haven't the least idea.
Do you, Miss Struther?
No. Do you want me to guess?
Yes, please.
Well, I should think it was something to do with the couturier, you know, costume people who sew bits of rag and stuff, bought bits of rag and stuff.
That's very
Doesn't
quick
sound
thinking.
Convincing.
Very quick thinking. Absolutely wrong, Jan, but very quick
Good,
thinking.
Yeah.
No, in the old days, these fellows sold custard, C-O-S-T-A-R-D-S, which I learn here, is a species of large, ribbed apple. Now, do you know the answer, Miss Struther, in case it ever comes up again at our 10th anniversary? How about people who are all dressed in white? Where do you find them, Mr. Kieran?
Cleaning our streets.
Very true, Mr. Kieran. I hadn't thought of the men in white, that sort of man in white. You'd find them, Mr. Kieran?
Also in an operating room.
Also in an operating room, Mr. Adams.
That's what I thought. Intern.
Also, the bride is all dressed in white.
No, oh, not always.
No.
No? Doesn't it say in that wedding march here, Miss Strother?
Something old and something new, something borrowed and something blue, so she isn't all dressed in white.
Well, doesn't it say, here comes the bride all dressed in white,
May say so, but it isn't the fact.
A misquotation, eh? All right. Gives us three colors out of three. Try this from Margaret A. Tarmey of Hartford, Connecticut, who advocated an international organization based upon the idea of a United States of Europe. Mr. Carlisle.
I think it was a man named Briand, a French statesman.
Exactly right, Mr. Carlisle. Aristide Briand, some years ago, advocated the United States of Europe. He was a little ahead of his time. And who advocated an organization based upon the union of the British Empire and the United States? Mr. Kieran?
Clarence Strite.
Clarence Strite has a famous plan for such a union. And finally, who advocated an international organization based upon the union of England and France? Miss Strother?
Well, Winston Churchill suggested it, didn't he?
Yes, at what time? At what juncture in history?
Just a little too late, the day that France fell, or the day before France fell.
Just before it surrendered, that's quite right. Miss D. Anderson of Merrick, Long Island, sends this one in. It's a nursery rhyme question. Who in nursery rhymes was thrown downstairs? Thrown downstairs? Miss Strother?
I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Yes, who was it?
An old man who wouldn't say his prayers.
An old man who wouldn't say his prayers.
Yes, that's right. Very good. From Goosey Goosey Gander. And how about the who was beaten all around the town? Beaten all around the town? Mr. Carlisle.
It was the Lion and the Unicorn, I think.
Well, will you tell us about them, Mr. Carlisle?
The Lion and the Unicorn.
We're fighting for the crown.
Fighting for the crown.
Yes.
The lion.
Yes.
Took the unicorn.
Beat him around the town.
Yes, yes, very good. And how about who was whipped and lashed? Whipped and lashed, Mr. Kieran?
A pony.
Tell us
about
the pony.
She whipped him, she lashed him, she drove him through the mire. I wouldn't lend my pony again for all the ladies hire.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much, Mr. Kieran. And now I'm going to ask our Heinz reporter a question. Can you tell us, Mr. Grauer, which one of the Heinz 57 varieties came first?
Yes, and you're going to be surprised at the answer. It wasn't pickles. No, the first of the Heinz services to the housewives of America was the grating of horseradish. Pickles came second. And then a few years later, Heinz started making their famous tomato ketchup and chili sauce. Probably you'd have found Heinz mustard, Worcestershire, and pepper sauce and other condiments standing in one of those old-fashioned castor sets on your own grandfather's table back in the 90s. As the years have gone by, Heinz has taken on a lot of different cooking jobs, 57 varieties of them. Right now, in spite of war work and army ration requirements, we are still brewing rich, old-fashioned soups, fixing food for the babies, putting up jellies and relishes to help set a better table for millions of American families. That's why we say to you ladies busy with war work as well as housework, look to that lucky number 57. It's been a symbol of neighborly helpfulness for three generations.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. We'll go on with a question from Charles L. Burbank of Attleboro, Massachusetts. In speaking to young ladies, we often use endearing terms, it says here. No matter what your sentiment may be, according to dictionary definitions, what are you actually calling her when you call her the following? In other words, what is the literal meaning of the following words of endearment? The first is very old-fashioned. I don't think they use it much anymore. Adorable. Adorable. What does it literally mean when you call a girl, Miss Strother?
Suitable to be prayed to.
Suitable to be prayed to is exactly right. What were you going to say, Mr. Adams?
Same thing.
Right.
To be worshipped.
I don't believe it.
She phrases it well, doesn't she, Mr. Adams? How about, this will be more familiar. Suppose you call the lady cutie. Cutie. What is the literal meaning? What do you really mean, Miss Strother?
Clever.
Clever. What's it from?
Acute.
And what does acute itself mean? Mr. Kieran?
Sharp.
And, well, it comes from something which is very sharp.
An angle.
A needle. I think the Latin from which the word comes is the same as the Latin for needle. And finally, you must have, Mr. Adams, you must have said this 1,000 times to people. If you say higher toots, What are you saying, actually? What does toots mean?
I don't know. That's what I call Miss Struthers.
Thanks a lot.
Anybody, any idea what you really mean when you say toots, Mr. Kieran?
I think it
yes,
it means little feet.
Yes.
Tootsie Wootsies.
Yes, that's right. It comes from Tootsie Wootsie. By metonymy, Mr. Kieran. Isn't that right? Naming the part for the whole. Very good. That gives us 3 out of 3. And also starts a romance between Mr. Adams and Miss Struther. Here's one from James S. Whiten of Denville, New Jersey. Of what illegal act at sea was each of these men guilty? The first is Jean Lafitte. What was, Miss Struther?
Piracy or piracy, however you like to pronounce it.
Well, how do you like to pronounce
it? No, smuggling.
Oh, you stick to the first one. Piracy
well,
is right.
Well, he did a bit of both.
Yes, he did a bit of both, yes. But piracy was the actual crime that he was guilty of. And what happened to Jean Lafitte? Mr. Kieran, do you know what happened to him?
I think he came to a bad ending around New Orleans, didn't he?
It seems a reasonable assumption. How about Fletcher Christian? He was guilty at sea of what illegal act, Mr. Kieran?
Mutiny.
Mutiny
on the Bounty.
Yes, mutiny on the Bounty. Mr. Karloff, what were you going to tell us?
Well, he speaks first. That's the trouble.
That is the trouble. And Lord Jim was guilty of what illegal act? Lord Jim, Mr. Karloff.
He deserted his ship.
Deserted the ship. You'd find all about Lord Jim where?
In a book called Lord Jim by Joseph Conrad.
Yes, that's quite right, Mr. Karloff. How about this from D.C. Poole of Princeton, New Jersey? Can you mention at least 3 cliches, conventional phrases, connected with riding or driving horses? For example, to kick over the traces might be one. Let's see if we can get 3 or 4 more, Mr. Kieran.
Hold your horses.
Yes, hold your horses. Very good, Mr. Karloff.
To take the bit in your teeth.
Very good, Mr. Karloff. Miss Struther?
To be riding for a fall.
Riding for a fall. Very good. We haven't got an image, Mr. Adams, from you.
I don't know anything about horses.
That ain't hay.
That ain't hay. Very good, Mr. Kieran. Sure. Come a cropper. Feeling his oats and so forth. Any one of those would be very good. Thomas J. Hickey of Silver Springs, Maryland, sends this one in. Miss Struther, anthologies of English poetry generally begin with what lyric? Yes?
Are you addressing this question to me only?
Yes, I just thought I might try you on it. Mr. Adams?
Summer is a-coming in.
Summer is a-coming in. Right. And
Luda sing cuckoo.
Now, how about these phrases about summer? They all occur in the opening lines of famous poems, quote, the entire line. The first phrase is, a summer evening. A summer evening, Mr. Adams.
It was a summer evening, Battle of Blenheim.
yes, that's the first line and the title of a poem.
Oh, Casper's work was done.
Yes, and what was he doing?
Sitting in the sun.
Yes, he was before his cottage door and sitting in the sun in order to make the rhythm better. A balmy summer evening. A balmy summer evening, Mr. Kieran.
It was a balmy summer evening and a goodly crowd was there.
Very good. And what was that from?
The Face on the Floor, I believe.
Face on the Floor by Hugh Darcy. Mr. Karloff, you don't recollect that?
No.
A little out of your line. Hasn't the proper classical flavor. How about this one? A summer's day. A summer's day. What, Mr. Struther? Mr. Struther?
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? With a summer's day.
No, to a summer's day.
To a summer's day.
How does it go on?
Thou art more lovely and more temperate.
Very good. Can you give us another line or two?
Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date.
That'll
be enough, I think.
Very good. Thank you, Miss Struther. Yes, it's from one of the most famous sonnets of Shakespeare.
Mr. Kieran will tell you the number of the sonnet.
Could you possibly, Mr. Kieran?
I think it's either 16 or 18.
You don't look at me for confirmation.
It's 18,
Mr.
I think.
Oh, you know, Miss Struther.
No, I don't, but I'm guessing.
You've been holding out on it.
That's right, X, V, and 3 I's.
Oh, that's where you remember. And now, here's our Heinz reporter, Mr. Grauer, with his answer to a question that was asked by William Shakespeare of Stratford-on-Avon. The question is, what's in a name?
We all know that a good name is a mighty precious possession. In every community, there are people whose names mean a great deal. People who are known as hard workers, fair dealers, good neighbors. When they pass that name along to their children, it's something to live up to. Many's the town where being Joe White's or Frank Williams' boy is as much a title as Sir This or Lord That. And that family name also carries a responsibility. The same thing is true of the name of a company like H.J. Heinz, makers of the 57 varieties. In millions of American homes, Heinz has always seemed like the name of an old friend of the family. When Dad and Mother went to housekeeping, and even when Grandmother was a bride, people knew and trusted the Heinz name and Heinz quality. If it's Heinz, they said, it's bound to be good. Now that's a reputation worth working for, worth keeping. And you can be sure that in spite of war scarcities and restrictions, every package that carries the name of Heinz 57 varieties is and will be the finest food that care, skill, and knowledge can prepare.
Thank you, Mr. Brower. How about this one from Mary W. Wells of Indianapolis? This is all about people who are terrorized in one way or another, and Mr. Karloff, you should be on your toes. I suppose those long claws that you have are toes. Who was terrorized by a dull blue eye with a hideous veil over it? Mr. Karloff?
That's me.
All right, who was it?
It was the old gentleman in The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe.
That's right.
No, it was the boy in The Telltale Heart. It was the old man who had the eye.
That's right. The old man had the eye, and what does the boy do in The Telltale Heart?
He stands in the open doorway and stares at the eye till he can't, till he gets too much for him. Then he sort of goes in and strangles him.
Yes. That's a sort of happy ending from your point of view,
yes,
isn't it? who was terrorized by a detached hand that moved its five fingers. A detached hand that moved its five fingers. Mr. Karloff, our monstrous
friend. I'm getting a little embarrassed about this.
Why?
But it was a young man, and the hand belonged to his uncle, who had died, and he'd been the victim of automatic writing.
Yeah.
And the hand was chopped off at the uncle's request by an evil spirit that had inhabited him.
Very gay.
And it was sent to the nephew and sort of made things unpleasant for him.
Yes, yes, you put it very nicely.
Called The Beast with Five Fingers.
The Beast with the Five Fingers. And who wrote the story? W.F.
Harvey. That name Harvey?
Yes, that's right. A very good chiller writer, Mr. Karloff. Mr. Karloff, you indulge in the reading of these things as well as in the acting of them, don't you?
Oh, I love them.
How about this one, then? Kieran, by the way, is absolutely white. Who was terrorized by an animal's paw that turned in one's hand? An animal's paw, Mr. Adams.
That was probably the monkey's paw by W.W. Jacobs.
Yes, that's quite right. And who were the people?
I don't know.
Mr. Karloff, have you read the story?
I don't remember its turning in his hand.
Yes, it does, Mr. Atkins.
I think it was the mother and father of a boy who was away.
Yes, that's right. Mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. White were the names. Yes, the paw does actually turn in the hand of one of them at the very end, Mr. Karloff. Try it. It'll give you a new shudder.
I will. Thank you.
Not at all. Always glad to make you happy. How about this
thank
one
you.
From Miss Louise Hinchcliffe of Webster, Massachusetts? This is about pursuers and fugitives of one sort or another. A pursuing army was drowned to the last man. What pursuing army, Mr. Kieran?
The army of the Egyptians pursuing Moses and his people across the Red Sea.
Yes, that's exactly right. And you'll find it, as Mr. Adams would say, in Exodus XIV. Here's another set of pursuers and fugitives, or rather one set. A third baseman chased a second baseman. Who are these people, Mr. Kieran?
Heinie Zimmerman chased Eddie Collins. Heinie Zimmerman was the third baseman, and he chased Eddie Collins across the plate in a World Series. And I was out of the country, so I don't remember whether it was either 1917 or 18.
Yes. What were you doing?
I was working for about $33 a month for Uncle Sam.
That is the correct answer. And how about this? A farmer's wife hit back at her pursuers. Miss Struther?
It was the farmer's wife and the three blind mice.
Well, will you prove it? How did she hit back at them?
With a carving knife.
Yes. What did she do, Miss Struther?
She chopped off their tails with a carving knife.
There's one for you, Karloff. Isn't that
right?
Cut off their tails with a carving knife. Very good. Mr. Greeley, W.R. Greeley of Lexington, Massachusetts, sends this one in. This is all about legendary heroes who were made invulnerable in various fashions. What happened to them? The first one was dipped in the River Styx. Oh, I have four hands, apparently. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was Achilles who was dipped in the River Styx, but his mother held him by the heel to keep him from going under entirely, so his heel was not invulnerable, and he finally was shot in the heel.
Yes, who shot him?
Well, that I don't remember.
Mr. Karloff?
I think it was Hector, wasn't it?
No, he killed Hector.
Oh. I think it was Paris. Paris in the post-Homeric story shot him with an arrow. How about the legendary hero who bathed himself in the dragon's blood and was made invulnerable on that account? What happened to him? Who was he first? One who was bathed, Miss Struther?
I think it was Perseus.
I think it was not Perseus.
Oh.
There's a slight difference of opinion here. One of us must be wrong, Mr. Kieran.
Would that be St. George?
No, I don't think so. I think it was Siegfried.
Oh.
Remember when Siegfried bathed himself? It's all in Wagner. There was only one exposed spot between the shoulders where a leaf from a linden tree stuck as he took his bath. And later on he was killed by the villain, whose name was Hagen. That's one wrong. We have to get the next one right. This hero, in the case of this hero, his mother got the promise of all living things except one, that he would come to no harm. What happened to him? Miss Struther.
That was Loki, the evil god in Scandinavian mythology, and his mother got everybody to got the promise of all living things that belonged to the earth or the air, that they wouldn't harm him. But she forgot about the mistletoe, which is a parasite and lives between the earth and the air. And so Balder, his half-brother or something, made a... No, listen, I'm wrong. It was Balder was
That's
the
right.
guy
I was waiting
that got
for you to
the
correct
promise.
That's quite
Sorry.
Right. It was Balder.
Balder was the
good.
Guy that they promised about, and Loki, the bad one, made a bow or an arrow out of mistletoe wood, an arrow, I guess.
Yes.
And so he was able to shoot Balder with it, because it didn't belong to the earth or the air. Is that clear?
That is extremely clear. I'm glad you told the whole story, so as to make it clear that it was Balder, the handsome hero who was killed, rather than Loki, the villain.
Yeah, but he came alive again. It was all right.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a happy ending for you, Miss Struther. Now, how about this one for Miss A.J. DeArmond of Philadelphia? Who, in fact or fiction, revealed a secret of his past by a mark on his forehead? The secret of his past was revealed by the presence of a mark on his forehead. Come, come, ladies and gentlemen, I'm surprised at all four of you. A mark on his forehead, a mark on his forehead. Mr. Curran? Mr. Karloff?
It might have been Cain.
Yes, indeed, it was Cain. The Lord set a mark upon Cain.
I'm very glad, thank you.
Yes, in The Skin of Our Teeth, Mr. Wilder's play, which has just won the Pulitzer Prize, one of the characters, the son, I imagine is the personification of Cain, because he has a mark on his forehead, too, unless it's bad makeup, I'm not sure. How about one who revealed a secret of his past through a scar on his leg? A scar on his leg. Don't you know, Mr. Adams? Mr. Karloff.
Was that Jean Valjean?
No, it was not.
Oh.
That was a quick passage of conversation, wasn't it? No, it was Ulysses. Remember, in the Odyssey, Ulysses, after many of his wanderings, comes home, and his old nurse, Euryclea, recognizes him when she washes his feet. And how about one who revealed a secret of his past by the fact that he dragged one leg a little? Mr. Kieran.
That was Jean Valjean.
That was Jean Valjean.
He dragged his leg because he had been chained. He wore a ball attached to his leg when he was in the galley.
I think we'll have time for this from James H. Black of this city. What happens when, quote, love is done? Close quote. Mr. Adams?
Well,
Now, what about a biography, please? Mr. Kieran?
The light of the whole world dies when the light of a whole life dies when world is done by Francis Bourdon.
Very good. And what happens when, quote, day is done, close quote? Day is done. Mr. Kieran?
I think of you. The song.
That's
day
the song,
is done.
Yes. I dream of you.
I
Don't
dream.
Be so intellectual, John. I dream of you. Quote, what happens when, quote, faith is lost? Mr. Kieran,
a man is dead.
Where'd you get that from?
Webster. A charge Whittier's, against Webster.
Yes, Whittier's Ichabod. That's 3 out of 3, and that's all we have time for. Thank you, Miss Struther and Mr. Karloff, for the first-rate transcontinental assistance.
on Information Please's fifth birthday. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will again be present, along with two guests, the eminent theatrical publicist Richard Maney and that great lady of the theater whose name is her introduction, Miss Ethel Barrymore, currently starring in The Corn is Green. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please, 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, Ben Grauer.
H.J. Hines invites you to sit in with the experts again next week at the...
Information Please, from 1943. If you have a request that you'd like to hear a program on the podcast, well, why don't you just send us that request? Send it to podcastrequest@radioent@gmail.com. Now, here's another game show that's a little bit on the other side of the spectrum. It's Truth or Consequences from 1947, Instructions for Milking a Cow.
Put those in your washing machine. Take your clothes out bright and clean. When you does your wash, you'll sing. D-U-Z does everything.
Hello there, we've been waiting for you. It's time to play Truth or Consequences. Yes, Truth or Consequences, the show that does everything on the air, brought to you by Dove, the soap that does everything in your wash. And here is a very excited master of ceremonies tonight, folks. Excited because he dreamed that Miss Hush would be identified tonight. So here he is, dream boy, Ralph Edwards.
Greetings, party players, and hi, Harlow. Sit down, Harlow. Dream boy, my eye. Nightmare's more like it. Listen to the list of prizes to be won by the one person in our Truth or Consequences audience who identifies Miss Hush when we call on the phone. Now, Harlow, you check them off to make sure that I mention every one of them. A 1947 Buick Super Convertible from the Howard Automobile Company. A Bendix Home Laundry with washer, dryer, and automatic ironer. A round-trip ticket for two via United Airlines to Honolulu. And a suite of rooms for 2 weeks vacation at the Matson Lines Royal Hawaiian Hotel. A $2,000 Columbia House trailer, completely equipped. A $1,000 Diamond and Ruby Bulova wristwatch. An RCA Victor radio phonograph combination, plus a new 1948 RCA Victor television receiver and a library of 100 Red Seal records. An I.J. Fox $1,500 full-length beaver coat, an all-metal Luscombe Silvair airplane from Dallas, Texas, $2,000 in cash, a $1,000 Popular Mechanics home workshop with a library of Popular Mechanics instruction books, a Servel silent gas refrigerator, and Sherwin-Williams with their Cover the Earth trademark paints will paint your house inside and out. Of course, the winner should have a big red box that does, too. A real prize on wash day, right down the wash line, does everything. Now, in a few minutes, we'll make our first phone call in the Miss Hush Excuse me, a lady came up to my... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to yell at you. You scared me a little. No, but Al Paskill, you scared me now. Yeah. This late? What is your name, please?
Mary Vitunas.
Yeah. Well, hold on to it just a minute, Mrs. Voluptuous. Now, a phone call in the Miss Hush contest in just a moment. First, a consequence or two. Where are you from, Miss what?
Sister of Illinois, Mary Vitunas is my name.
Yes, how do you spell your last name?
V-A-I-C-U-N-A-S.
Smith. Well, come in a little. There you are. Get in as close as you can to the microphone.
There.
All right. Now, we asked for gentlemen in the audience who could speak Italian. This was one of the fellows. How do you do? What is your name, sir?
Carmen Papa.
And are you?
Yes. No, I'm not a father.
You're not a father. How are you, Mr. Papa?
Okay.
May I present Miss Vituminous?
How
19...
do you do?
Vicunas, you're from Cicero.
From Cicero.
What's your occupation?
Housewife, and I raise canaries.
You... Look, we got into rabbits last week. Let's leave the canaries alone.
But I didn't spit at you.
I know.
I got my teeth.
Yes, I... Mr. Poppy, you still here?
Yes, sir.
You raise canaries, too?
No.
Please say no. How many canaries do you have?
Oh, about 200.
Yeah. Get those Angora rabbits that Faye had up here last time with Mrs. Vesuvius's canaries. We'd be in a question. Miss will have a little consequence. Okay, Mrs.
Okay.
Mrs. Okay. All right, Mr. Papa, you do speak Italian.
Yes, ma'am.
How do you...
Yes, sir.
It's all right. We never know on this show what's going to happen. Listen, how would you say hello, everybody? Here we go.
Buongiorno, tutto quanti.
Yes, and you said that again. All right. Aldura Richardson of Chicago gets $5 for this question. From Chicago. Question from Chicago. What is it that you throw away the outside, cook the inside of the outside, eat the outside, and throw away the inside? Truth or Consequences, Mrs. Vicunas... And Mr. Papa.
I don't know.
Do you know that, Mr. Papa?
No, sir.
Corn on the cob.
Oh.
Corn on the cob, you throw away the outside, cook the inside of the outside, eat the outside, throw away the inside. How are the canaries?
Fine.
Who's taking care of them tonight?
Oh, Daddy.
Daddy's
taking sure.
The old crow's home.
Yeah,
Daddy,
the old
yes.
Crow. Right. The spring chicken here.
Yeah. The spring chicken's here. All right, good. I'll punch up the joke for you. All right. Now, Mr. Papa, you said in the warm-up that you spoke Italian.
Yes, sir.
Yes. All right. Now, we're going to give you something to say to Mrs. Vicunis here in Italian. Now, Mrs. Vicunis, you should excuse the expression. You run off stage a moment so you can't hear, you see?
Okay.
Okay, you go with Mr. Basco, Mr. Bailey. And Mr. Papa, if you can make Mrs. Vicunis understand in 2 minutes, when she comes back, 2 minutes, Mrs. Vicunis, what we have told you to say to her, we'll give you both $25 extra. You want to try?
Yes, sir.
Okay, boy. Now, Mrs. Vicunis is off stage. Now, we want you, in Italian, to explain to Mrs. Vicunis how to milk a cow.
Milk a cow.
Yes. And when you come to certain parts of your description, use the word faucets.
Faucets.
You can say that in English if you want.
Yes,
yes sir. A falsetto. No, that's a voice, isn't it? All right. Now, you can use your hands except for the one motion of milking a cow that would give the gag away. You probably have to use your hands in speaking, huh?
Well, I'll tell you, when Italian people speak, them hands explain everything, but I'll try.
You try. All right. But except when you come explaining how to milk a cow, don't use that motion, you know, like... Yeah. All right. Now, bring Mrs. Vicunis back. Don't anyone give the gag away. Now, Mrs. Vicunis, here she comes. All right, I'll get over here with the microphone. Johnny Pollock, turn on the roving microphone. And you stand over on this side, please, Mr. Papa. Now, Mrs. Vicunis, listen to me. $25 to both. Will you move it just a little so I can... Thank you. $25.
Okay.
I was trying to push, but I saw that was useless. Now, $25 to both you and Mr. Papa, if you can understand what he is trying to tell you in a 2-minute race against time. All right, Mr. Papa.
Signora Vicunis.
Hi.
Wait a minute, Link. You don't know what...
Deve voti voleva tu pugno mio vacca. Faucet?
No, I won't go home and lay no egg and hatch a canary.
No.
So, talk to the lady now.
Tu piente in un piccolo sedia, è pugno, sembra questa vacca, sembra dico. Moo.
Vada, no.
Tutti i piccoli ragazzi, sempre beve le latte. E vamo stellare, iniziare. E sempre dico questa vacca.
No, look,
we're all pulling for you. Come on now, get in.
Pugne.
E tutto latte,
what
happened?
E tu piccolo sedia. E pugne.
Oh, what do you want me to do? Sit down and what? Lay an egg in
your hand. Look, all right, use the word and show with the expression with the hands up.
You can... E pugne.
What kind of a noise does it make?
Moo. And a vacca, capito?
Oh, yes, I drive an automobile.
E pugne. Si pugna, latte, beve, fa muscolare,
yes.
Pugna.
What noise does it make?
Moo.
Oh, milk a cow.
Right.
Bravo. Thank you, Mr. Papa.
Thank you very much.
That was wonderful.
Wow, okay.
Pulling for you,
yeah.
Mr.
Does everything.
Oh,
yeah.
Goodness. You're wonderful.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much. $25 apiece extra plus $10 consequence money. Now, stand by. In a few moments, we make our first phone call in the Miss Hush contest. Oh, Mrs. Vicunis, you get this big... you get this big red box that does, too. You... Yes, you bet it does, Mrs. Vicunis. Here in Chicago, they found one thing doesn't do, though. It doesn't stay on the store shelves. Right, Harlow?
Right. More and more families are dozing their wash these days from Chicago to Cheyenne. Everybody's choosing this one wonderful soap that does everything in the family wash. Does really is different from all the other leading package soaps sold for wash day. Even gives you more suds, ounce for ounce.
And they're real soap suds, too.
You bet. Those Does suds have the cleaning power to get grease-stained work clothes clean, spanking clean with just a short washer run. To get streaked-up towels and linens beaming white, really dazzling white without any hard scrubbing. And does more. It's actually safer for the newest, brightest colors you wash.
When you've got Does, you've really got something.
Yes, the soap shortage proved there's no substitute for Does. You see why it's selling faster than ever, folks? First chance you get Does. From the roughest and toughest to the whitest and brightest. Does everything.
What a soap. Thanks, Harlow. My, aren't these, isn't this a lovely looking couple at the microphone? Here, two parents, I believe, from Chicago, right?
Right.
Come in real close. You're Mrs.
Albright.
Hello, Miss Albright. How are you tonight?
Just fine, thank you.
Just fine. That's good. And Mr. Albright?
Very good, thanks.
What's your occupation, sir?
I'm a chemical salesman.
Good. How's it selling these days? All
right. Well,
let's see. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, don't leave your phones or radio. A Miss Hush call is coming up, and we'll keep the party rolling with our two contestants here, Mr. and Mrs. Albright. Here's a question. Alice M. Hensel of Worcester, Massachusetts asks, what can run on one leg? What can run on one leg a long time? How about that, Miss Albright? What can run on one leg? A lady's stocking. That's terrible. All right, you haven't told the truth, so you must pay the consequences. Now, Mrs. Albright, Mr. Albright, you told us during our pre-airtime period that you had a little boy, 8, 9, 10, or 11, or how old?
Just 11.
Is that right, Mrs. Albright?
Yes.
All right, now, what is his name?
Tommy.
And where is he now?
Well, he's supposed to be in bed.
Oh, Tommy, you better be
he's
in
probably
bed.
Probably listening to this radio.
Program. Is he? Tommy, Mommy's on the radio. Look, Tommy, Mommy's on the radio. Mommy's on the radio. All right, now, backstage, we have a jury of psychologists, child psychologists, and we want you to discuss any problems you may have concerning your son, Tommy. So will you run off stage and make a list of the things you'd like to ask the jury? Will you do that, Mr. Albright? Mrs. Albright? Okay. All right. Now, this is going to prove very educational. Might be a great help in the future upbringing of your child. Off you go and get all the points listed. They go on. They can't hear. Ooh, what's going to happen to Mrs. Albright? Now, her husband, Mr. Albright, is in on the gag. The jury of child psychologists, we mentioned, is the famous juvenile jury that you hear on the radio. Jack Barry, their creator and conductor, has brought the jury to a truth or consequences tonight. It consists of 5 children from the ages of 5 to 10, but tonight it will consist of 6 children. The 6th is Mrs. Albright's little boy, Tommy, disguised as a little girl. And here he is in a blue dress, pink socks, and blonde curls. Come out, Tommy. Here he is. He's really a rough and tough little guy, but look at him. Hello, Tommy.
Pretty good.
Atta boy. Are you all set to play a little gag on Mother?
Sure am.
Oh, that voice coming out with that dress. Well, it'll work now, don't you worry. How do you feel, huh?
Like the dickens.
With the dress? Oh, don't worry about that. Now, just one thing. We'll call you Elizabeth, see?
Okay.
And whenever I ask you what you think of Tommy Albright, that you say, nothing wrong with him. He's a swell kid. Let's hear you say that in a high voice.
He's a swell kid.
That's it. Keep it up there. Now, Tommy, keep it up there. That's wonderful, Elizabeth. I mean, Tommy, excuse me. All right, now you go back behind the curtains with the juvenile jury. When I introduce them, you come out with them. Okay, now don't anyone give the gag away. Bring back the Albright. Aren't we devils? All right, now here we're all set to go. Mr. and Mrs. Albright. Ah, yes, Mr. and Mrs. Albright. The jury is about to appear, and you may sit in what we might call the witness chair. Are you all set, Mrs. Albright?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And I want you to meet... How are you now, Mr. Albright?
Very fine.
Just be seated with your wife. Meet the famous child psychologist and well-known radio juvenile jury. Come out, juvenile jury, and here they are. What do you think of that? What did you do? Did you expect PhD?
I certainly did.
Well, no. Well, let me tell you, these kids are terrific, Mrs. Albright. They know children, believe me. Children, I want you to meet Mr. and Mrs. Albright, whose child will be the subject of your discussion tonight. First, here is little... I tell you, I'll let each one of you give your names. Charlie, you get into the microphone, and this is Mrs. Albright, Charlie. You say your name.
Charlie Hankinson.
How do you do, Charlie?
How do you do?
Hello, Charlie. Yes, and little girl?
Peggy Booter, age 9.
How do you do, Peggy?
Charlie, how old were you?
6.
Yeah, well, you're going to be a big guy now. All right. Yes, sir? Your name?
Kong Lu.
How do you do?
Hello.
That's Kong. And then this is
Robin
Mr.
Robin Morgan, age 5. How
Robin
do you do?
Robin Morgan, the Albright. Hello, Robin.
Dickie Rollin, age 7.
Yes. And you're 7. And?
Elizabeth Bailey, age 9.
All right. Now, okay. Now, the jury is ready to hear any problems you have with your little son. Now, I'm not Jack Barry, but I'll try to be mediator here. And you may get in on this, too, Mr. Albright, if you will. All right. Your first problem, Mrs. Albright. You have a problem.
Yes, my little boy likes to go to the movies, but he wants to take a date. You think he's too young.
All right. Now, let's see. Charlie, what do you have to say about that?
What movies does he like to go to?
Well, Wild West and Adventure.
Huh? Double features. He can spend more time there.
All right. Peggy?
Has your son had any experiences with girls before?
Well, we're not quite sure.
What'd you say?
We're not quite sure.
She's not quite sure. She's All right. Elizabeth?
Oh, nothing wrong with him. He's all right.
Yes. All right. Now, Kong?
Is the girl pretty?
Well, we hope so.
Yes, let's have Robin now.
Well, you're probably worried about him going out because he takes too much of your money. So why don't you tell him to ask the girl to pay for everything, and then he won't have to worry.
Well, do you think he'd get a girl to go out that way?
Do you think he'd get a girl to go out? Well, I'll tell you what, we'll save that for the decisive period, which comes later. Dickie?
Did you go out with boys when you were 11?
No, I didn't.
Well, that could be that. All right, Elizabeth?
Nothing wrong with Tommy. I just think you should let him go out.
Let him go out. All right. Well, now, this is very good. Colm, do you have another question?
How old is a girl?
About his age or a little bit younger?
Yes. All right. Now, all right. Charlie, Quay, they keep...
How much younger?
Not too much.
Do you have another one, Robin, that you want
to... Yes, sir. The only question I can think of is, who is Miss Hush?
It's Mumbles. That isn't supposed to be in there now. Mumbles. All right. Now, I tell you what. We have the problem has been presented. The questions have been asked by the kiddies. Now, let's have each child here on the juvenile jury say what they want to about this situation. Now, here comes the decision. Let's see. Do you have a decision in mind for this Mrs. Albright, Mr. Albright, about their son who wants to go to the movies and they don't want him to go? Charlie, how about you?
Well, I think that you should let him go to the movies. Even he's so young, but I think he should.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm glad to have your opinion.
Yeah. All right, let's have Peggy. Now, Peggy?
Well, before I give my answer, I want to ask one question. How much allowance does he get?
About 50 cents a week.
Oh, boy. I'd like to meet him myself.
Yeah, now, never mind, Peggy. Please, Colm, what do you got to say? How do you all right, Colm, what do you say?
I think he should go out with a girl. Because later he might like to marry her.
Yes, you can't tell. Robin?
Well, I think that he'll have enough time to go out with girls when he's 23 or 50.
Oh, she's on your side.
Go on, Patty.
All right. Dickie?
Well, the way the girls are wearing long dresses today, I don't know why anyone would want to take it in.
Oh,
Dickie.
All right. Now, Elizabeth, what do you think?
Nothing wrong with Tommy. He's a good kid.
Yes, all right. Well, I guess these children have solved all your problems, Mrs. Albright. I think you should be grateful for all this advice. As a matter of fact, Elizabeth here has a great deal of faith in your little boy, hasn't he? Nothing wrong with him. Oh, both of you, come on over here, and I want you to meet them personally. Elizabeth seemed to have a great deal of faith there. My goodness. Isn't Elizabeth cute, Mrs. Albright?
She certainly is.
Yes, hasn't she got beautiful blonde curls?
Very, I should say.
Elizabeth, give your curls to Mrs. Albright, why don't you? Huh? Are you going to give the curls to her? Hey, there you are, Mama.
Hi, Mom. Well, Tommy Albright, what are you doing now?
Oh, man, we really got it.
I'm going to pull you, Mom.
I don't know what to say.
Oh, right. Well, it's little Tommy. How do you feel now?
I feel like getting off this dress.
I'll bet you do, kid. Thank you, juvenile jury, for a wonderful job. Thanks, too, to your head man, Jack Barry. For each of you, including Tommy, we have a $25 savings bond and a Parker pen and pencil set. And for you, Mr. and Mrs. Albright, we have a 72-piece set of fine art sterling silver plus a big red box of Does. There you are. Any jury will tell you there's no soap quite like Does. From the roughest and toughest to the whitest and brightest, Does does everything. And now, stand by, America. I'm now going to call the person who gets first crack at tonight's giant jackpot consequence. This is the person in our radio audience who gave us in our first week's contest the best reason why we all should support the March of Dimes. Now, let's see. Let's have, first of all, the call here. Hello. Yes, hand me the phone, please. Now, place the operator. Get me Charlotte, North Carolina, please. Now we know the city. I'll bet everyone in Charlotte, North Carolina, who entered the Miss Hush contest is shaking in his boots. Hello. Charlotte, North Carolina, our NBC operator will give you a number in Charlotte to call. Will you please ring it? Give her the number, please, NBC. We found out that Miss Hush is not Elsa Maxwell, Maude Adams, Spring Byington, nor Fred Allen. As a matter of fact, we've had a couple of very exciting weeks with the telephone calls. We lost 10 years of our lives there last week. Hello? Waiting for the call. There you. Hello. This is Ralph Edwards of the Truth or Consequences broadcast. How are you? Is this Mrs. George A. Steele of 1424 East 7th Street, Charlotte, North Carolina? Is this? Are you speechless? Now, the rules say the writer of the best entries must be ready at their telephones. Your entry on why we should all support the March of Dimes was selected as the best entry tonight. All right, the big question, and you can give only one answer. Tell us who you think is Miss Hush. Will you say that again, please?
You say Sister Elizabeth Kenny? You say Sister Elizabeth Kenny. Oh, I'm sorry. Sister Elizabeth Kenny is wrong, but don't let this discourage you from trying again next week in case our second and third calls tonight are incorrect. And thank you, Mrs. George A. Steele of 1424 East 7th Street, Charlotte, North Carolina, for your contribution to the March of Dimes. Thank you. You're a lovely lady. Good night. Good night. Two more calls now to be made. Let's have some more consequences first. Huh? All right, let's get the calls in then. That's okay. Let's get the calls going tonight. Later on, you will hear the voice of Miss Hush, and I'll tell you how to become eligible for the giant jackpot of prizes. And now listen. Does nominate this week's Dishpan Duzzer. She's Mrs. John Boucher, 135 Forer Boulevard, Dayton, Ohio.
Congratulations, Mrs. Boucher. You found Does does everything in the dishpan, too. From a fast cleanup on greasy pans to ever-loving care for hands. Believe me, Does is a whiz for dishes. Even makes more suds, ounce for ounce, than any strong granulated soap. Real soap suds that stand up till the last dish is done. Changing to Does from those soaps can mean smoother, prettier hands, too. Start Does in your dishes, folks. Does everything.
Does it, Harlow. Attaboy. Now we call the writer of the second best entry in this week's Miss Hush contest on Truth or Consequences for the March of Dimes. Hand me the phone again, please, Al. Oh, my. Here we go. Hello, operator. Get me the Bronx, New York, please. Okay, here we go. This could be it. Stand by, Miss Hush, in case it's guest. NBC Engineer X, stand by. Our first call to Mrs. George A. Steele of Charlotte, North Carolina, proved the voice was not that of Sister Elizabeth Kenny. Hello, New York City. Our NBC operator will give you a number to call in New York City. Would you please ring it? If this person cannot identify Miss Hush, we will make our third call in a few minutes. In a city of 7 or 8 million people, there's a good chance that it could be ended with the right name. Who is Miss Hush? Hello? Hello? Is this Mr. Charles Kieran of 50 West Tremont Avenue, Bronx 53, New York City? Mr. Kieran, this is Ralph Edwards on Truth or Consequences. How are you, sir? You've been waiting for this. Hello, I've been waiting for you. He says, that's fine. That name Kieran, that sort of scares me. One Kieran, John Kieran, is a regular encyclopedia of knowledge. Are you? No relation. Good. Your entry on why no relation, period. Your entry on why we all should support the March of Dimes was selected as the second best entry tonight. All right, tell us who you think is Miss Hush. You say the answer is Miss Tallulah Bankhead. You say Tallulah Bankhead? Mr. Kieran, I'm sorry. Miss Hush is not Tallulah Bankhead. Thanks for supporting the March of Dimes. Many polio victims will be aided by your and other entrants' contribution. Try again next week, sir, and good night. Thank you very much, Mr. Kieran. All right, now... on with another consequence. I keep saying consequences. Let's give it the phone call. You betcha. And in a few minutes, another phone call. And if Miss Hush is not identified, then you'll hear the voice right after this call. I'm glad you're making your contributions dollars as well as dimes when you send in your entries. Give me the phone again, please. Hello, third call to the writer of the third best entry in this 1947 Miss Hush contest. Operator, get me Reno, Nevada, please. Oh, anything can happen out there, you know. This person doesn't know the identity. Miss Hush, three more fabulous prizes will be added to our already giant... Hello? Reno, Nevada. This is NBC Chicago. Our operator will give you a number in Reno. Will you please ring it? We certainly had good representation tonight. Charlotte, North Carolina, the Bronx, New York. Now, Reno. I wonder if Clara Bow is listening. Oh, she's in Las Vegas, of course. I wonder if Mrs. Hush knew who Miss Hush is. Hello? Hello, this is Ralph Edwards of Truth or Consequences. Is this Mrs. A.P. Wilson of 631 West Street, Reno, Nevada? Congratulations on a fine entry statement, Mrs. Wilson. Now, before I ask you the all-important question, your entry on why we should support the March of Dimes was selected as the third best entry tonight, so you get an opportunity to identify the voice of Miss Hush. The big question now, tell us who you think is Miss Hush. You think it is who? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It is not Sister Kenny. That's a shame that you weren't listening. Sister Kenny is wrong. But thanks on behalf of the March of Dimes and Truth or Consequences. Keep trying, will you? Good night in Reno. Also, the name of Miss Hush remains a mystery for another week. Listen to the jackpot now. I hope your name will be called next week. Next week, in addition to the 1947 Buick Super Convertible from the Howard Automobile Company, a Bendix Home Laundry, a round-trip ticket for two via United Airlines Mainliner 300 to Honolulu, and a suite of rooms for a 2 weeks vacation at the Matson Line's famous Royal Hawaiian Hotel, a $2,000 Columbia House trailer, a $1,000 Diamond and Ruby Boulevard wristwatch, an RCA Victor radio phonograph combination plus a new 1948 RCA Victor television receiver, and a library of 100 Red Seal records, an IJ Fox 1500 full-length beaver coat, a Luscombe Silvair all-metal airplane, $2,000 in cash, a $1,000 Popular Mechanics home workshop with a library of Popular Mechanics instruction books, a Servel silent gas refrigerator, and Sherwin-Williams Cover the Earth trademark paints will paint your house inside and out. To all this, Truth or Consequences next week will add a Hart Schaffner and Mark suit and top coat for every adult man and woman in your family, a Tappan gas kitchen range, and a 13-cubic-foot Jacobs home freezer, product of Jacobs Wind Electric Company, Minneapolis, filled with bird's-eye frozen foods. Who is Miss Hush? Well, stand by. Here she is. From somewhere in the United States comes the voice of Miss Hush. Listen and good luck. Here is the voice.
Second for Santa Claus, first for me. 13 for Reese, 7 for tree. Bring me an auto, a book, and a ball, and I'll say Merry Christmas in spring, not in fall.
Who is it? If you think you can identify the voice of Miss Hush, this is what you do to enter the contest. Now listen, everybody get in it. One, finish this sentence in 25 additional words or less. We should all support the March of Dimes because. Two, enclose your entry in an envelope, only one entry to an envelope, with a money contribution, if you please, for the March of Dimes. Three, mail with your name, address, and telephone number printed clearly in the upper right-hand corner to Miss Hush, Hollywood, California. Don't send your entries to the Truth or Consequences office. Four, do not include the name of Miss Hush with or on your entry. And don't forget, each week brings a new contest until Miss Hush is identified. All entries received by Monday, November 17th, will be judged, and the writer of the best entry in this group will be called next Saturday. Enter each contest as often as you choose, however, only one entry to an envelope. Eligibility for participation is not contingent upon your contribution to the March of Dimes. Let your heart be your guide. Each week, the writer of the best entry will be called, as we did tonight. You must be available at your telephone at the time of our Eastern broadcast. Now, if you know the identity of Miss Hush, when we call you, you win the giant jackpot. Entries will be judged for sincerity, originality, and aptness of thought. And listen to this. The judge's decision is final. If you are not at your phone for any reason when we call you at the time of the Eastern broadcast, you automatically will be eliminated. All entries and ideas therein become the property of Truth or Consequences. None will be returned. Any resident of the United States may compete except employees of Truth or Consequences, NBC, Procter & Gamble, their advertising agencies, and their families. Only one attempt will be made to reach the contender for the prize, and that attempt will be on a regular Eastern broadcast on Saturdays at 8:30 Eastern Time, 7:30 Central Time, 6:30 Mountain Time, 5:30 Pacific Time. Remember, finish this sentence in 25 additional words or less. We should all support the March of Dimes because. The address, Miss Hush, Hollywood, California. Now here she is again, Miss Hush from somewhere in the United States. Come on, you know this woman. Can't you give us some hint, Miss Hush?
I'll try, but it's hard for me to express myself on the radio. You listeners probably have never heard my voice, but students and adults should know my profession. They know all about Santa Claus. Although it's not time to retire, good night, everybody.
Who is it? I'll give you another clue. It's not Fibber McGee and Molly. Someone is going to win. Maybe next week, I hope it's you. And if your contributions to the March of Dimes are generous, the polio victims, large and small, will be the winners in the end. So get in the contest. Now, well, how does you do? It's our happy Goodessie singers with their merry washing machine.
Hello. D-U-Z.
Put those in your washing machine.
Work clothes come out oh so clean.
White things white and colored things bright.
D-U-Z does everything.
From the roughest and the toughest to the whitest and the brightest.
No soap white like does before.
Does is different, does more.
When you does your wash, you'll sing. D-U-Z does everything.
D-U-Z.
That was sensational, kids. Very good. Now, let's see. The grand prize winner tonight was Mr. Papa and Mrs. Kosovatova, who did the milking a cow there in Italian. Here's a $25 savings bond. Folks, the truth is most dealers pay you good money for used kitchen fat. Why? Because the fats and oil shortage continues worldwide. Everybody save every drop. Ralph Edwards sending you dozens of good washes. Until next week, thanks, juvenile jury. Miss Hush calls again next week. Good night, everybody.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for Procter & Gamble, the makers of Does. Ralph Edwards' Truth or Consequences came to you from Chicago, Hollywood, and Miss Hush's Hideaway. Prepare to be dazzled. See your hair shine its brightest with new improved Dream Shampoo. Compared to dulling soap shampoos, new Dream reveals up to 33% more sheen. With your very first Dream Shampoo, you'll see up to 33% more sheen.
Extra money, money, money. $25,000 offered in Dream's sensational contest. First prize, $10,000. Get entry blank and complete information at your dealer's. You may win a fortune. Don't miss Green's $25,000 contest.
NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.